It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the line of fire.
Well, I posted just a little friendly question on Facebook a couple hours back. It's a real simple question. Does it matter to God if Christians keep the dietary laws? Speaking in particular of Gentile Christians, but you can include Jewish believers in the question, does it matter to God if Christians keep the dietary laws? And already a passionate discussion between the different sites. We've gotten over 100 comments of folks weighing in so far. We haven't even gotten to the broadcast yet. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us. Yes, that's our topic today. Does it matter to God if Christians keep the dietary laws? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Now, I have to say, we've come a very, very long way from when I got saved. It was not uncommon. I didn't experience this personally, but it was not uncommon. And it still happens, but especially a few decades back, a Jewish person would get saved, and Christians would check out to see if he or she was really saved. How would you know? You give them a ham sandwich. I'm not kidding you. Give them a ham sandwich. If they can eat a ham sandwich, then they're really saved. In fact, in the Middle Ages, there were Catholic baptismal formulas where the Jewish people getting baptized would have to renounce any connection to their Jewish people whatsoever. Sabbath observance, Passover, anything. Have to completely and utterly renounce it, and would even have to say, well, I'm going to eat pork, even if all my life I haven't, I'm going to eat pork. I mean, you're talking about something completely outrageous. We've come a long way from there. We've come a long way from when I got saved and the climate then, to the point that it's very common for Jewish believers to think, yeah, it's good for us to keep the dietary laws. Some believe we are required to keep the dietary laws, among other laws. And then there are Gentile Christians who think it's good that we keep the dietary laws, and others who think it's mandatory that we keep the dietary laws. The question, I tried to pose it as broadly as I could. Does it matter to God if Christians keep the dietary laws? And we'll break this down into Jewish believers and Gentile believers. Why? Because a Jewish person might say, out of solidarity with my people, I feel I should do it. Or as to put no stumbling block before my people, or to help in my witness, or to just give a certain sense of covenantal solidarity as I raise my children at a point of identification. So let's just say there could be potentially a different motivation for a Jewish believer than a Gentile believer. So we'll look at it separately. And the New Testament even takes it up separately, assuming that the Jewish believers were keeping the Torah, including the dietary laws. The question was, did the Gentiles have to? The question among the early believers was not, can you follow Jesus and still be Jewish? No, because all the first followers were Jewish following Yeshua. The question was, do you have to become Jewish? If you're a Gentile, do you have to become a Jew in order to follow Jesus? That was the question that was asked in Acts 15. So we'll break it down between Jewish and Gentile believers. I was thinking of phrasing it, should Christians keep the dietary laws, but that could be ambiguous. Must Christians keep the dietary laws? That'd be too strong. So I thought the best way to phrase it was, does it matter to God if Christians keep the dietary laws? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Now, there are a lot of scriptures that can be used that seem to indicate that the dietary laws passed away, that they had a certain function and they reached their completion, and that they primarily were given to keep Israel separate and to symbolize the uncleanness of the Gentiles after the cross. Things changed, Jew and Gentile together, one in the Messiah, therefore the dietary law is no longer binding. Others would say that's a complete misinterpretation of the passages. Others would say, look, for health reasons, it is good for us to keep the dietary laws. Forget spiritual reasons. I'm going to weigh in first. I often raise the questions, take your calls, get your opinions, and then I state my views, and this way you can weigh in freely and without me prejudicing the argument, but I'm going to weigh in first. I'm a Jewish follower of Jesus. All right? I am going to weigh in with my opinion. Does it matter to God if we as believers, and I'll speak in particular to my Gentile Christian friends, does it matter to God if you keep the dietary laws? From a spiritual perspective, I say absolutely not. Absolutely not. From a spiritual perspective, I believe it is absolutely immaterial in terms of whether you're living in a culture, in this particular culture, they eat certain foods that would be considered unclean by biblical standards or Old Testament law standards as given to Israel. There may be health issues involved. Certainly plenty of places in the world, pigs are not healthy to eat. There may be health issues involved with some of the animals, but certainly all the dietary laws were not given for health reasons. No one has yet argued categorically, conclusively, that every single animal that Israel was forbidden to eat was forbidden because of health reasons. I would say that spiritually speaking, in God's sight, it is immaterial. That, again, there's practicality about health and those kinds of things. It may be healthier to eat certain things than others. One of the Facebook comments said, hey, look, I'm going totally vegan, just whole food. Okay, those are other issues. But spiritually speaking, does it defile you? If you eat pig, if you have pepperoni pizza, if you have a bacon cheeseburger, does it spiritually defile you? I say absolutely, categorically, no. Now, there are some folks that, Dr. Brent, I don't believe you. I don't respect anymore. I'm going to listen to the show. Well, hey, let's talk about it. I know it's a very important issue to a lot of folks. Let's talk about it. I do want to take one call, though, from Michael in Conyers, Georgia, because Michael, I think, had a journey that many other believers these days have had, and it's a journey that can often get them off track. Hey, Michael, thanks for calling in today.
Yes, sir.
So were you raised in a Jewish home or a non-Jewish home?
I was raised in a non-Jewish home. My father's side is Jewish, but they did not know it till years later, so I was brought up in the Methodist Church.
All right. And at what point in your life did you really become a follower of Jesus?
When I was probably 1984, 1985, I made a commitment to Jesus, Yeshua, at a Bible study. And from that point on, it's just, you know, been going since that far. It was just a home study. We were young and, you know, against the authority of the church and had our own study and felt like we knew better than everybody else. I came to know Jesus at that time.
All right, and certainly there was no consciousness back then that you should be keeping dietary laws or that there were parts of the Torah that were mandatory on you for today, right?
Not at all. The only thing we at that time when we first got saved was we wanted to bring as many people to Jesus as we could. We were in the Keith Green and stuff, you know, of that nature.
Got
and
it.
We were bold to just preach the gospel. That's all we were doing.
All right. So obviously, there's certain things, moral commandments that are repeated in the New Testament. You knew were binding, but at a certain point, though, you got interested in keeping the dietary laws, or what? How did that happen?
About 10 years ago, got involved in a messianic movement down in Mobile, Alabama, a friend of mine, and started learning, actually, in Assembly of God Sunday school class. We started learning about the feasts and the festivals, and, you know, it was really interesting. And at this time, I also found out that we were Jewish on my dad's side. And it started kind of like taking over. Everybody, matter of fact, that was in the group that I was in, the Sunday school class, basically wound up leaving the church, joining a messianic shul, and things of that nature.
All right, but these were fellow believers, though, that
right.
were... how many would you say were actually Jewish in the messianic congregation?
None.
Okay, so it was, what about the leader?
The leader was, yes.
Okay, but everybody else was Gentile.
Right.
And yet you all felt that you should start taking on the, beginning with the dietary laws and other Jewish traditions.
Right.
All right, and we've got about a minute before the break, but what happened to you spiritually? Did this really enhance your walk with the Lord, draw you closer, or make things complicated?
At first it was truly exciting because, you know, I was seeking the Word and seeking more of the Old Testament. But then I started noticing that I started withdrawing from my brothers within the church and actually started fighting against them. And I also lost a lot of joy. I lost a lot of freedom. I was even being tossed in that we didn't need, no longer need to share the message of Jesus because, you know, as Jews, we don't proselyze. And it just, you know, the traditional, right? It takes you on rabbinical Judaism.
And ultimately, you lost the early passion that you had for Yeshua.
I lost everything. I considered to be a deist or, God forbid, an atheist, which I never could, but a deist sounded better because it was too much. It was emotionally too much.
Got it. Hey, Michael, I appreciate you sharing that, and glad to put it at the head of the broadcast because I have a grave concern, and your story I've heard 100 times or 1,000 times over of folks who start with all sincerity and end up in bondage and confusion. Hey, Michael, the blessing of the Lord be upon you. I'm glad that you've found your way back to your first love. All right, a lot to talk about. Stay with us. Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, thanks so much for joining us. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884 to weigh in. Email me at drbrown@askdrbrown.org. Does it matter to God if Christians keep the dietary laws? Does it matter to God? Is he concerned if Christians, Gentile Christians, eat pork, eat pepperoni pizza, eat bacon and eggs, eat shrimp, eat lobster? Is he concerned if Jewish believers do it? Was that something that was just given at one time to ancient Israel and has no relevance today? Or is there meaning and importance in every letter of the Torah? Didn't Jesus say he didn't come to abolish but to fulfill? Does God care about our diet? I'm not talking about for health reasons. Certainly God cares if we overeat because it's unhealthy. God cares if we are gluttons and out of control. If there are certain things that are unhealthy to eat, he cares in that sense because we're hurting ourselves and not being good stewards of our bodies and not being self-controlled and disciplined. But I'm talking about spiritually speaking, as far as defilement, as far as, is there such a thing as food being unclean today? Do you believe that there are any foods that are actually unclean? You might say, well, blood pudding, you know, food that actually has blood in it, because we're not to ingest blood because blood has life. All right, you could argue that. Is there anything else? Let's take a look at some of the passages. And before I do this, let me say what's of the greatest importance to me. I am very concerned about a trend I have watched for years and years unfolding, and I wrote about it and warned about it decades ago, a trend unfolding where people get caught up in externals. And in particular, Gentile believers get caught up thinking that somehow they'll be more spiritual if they take on Jewish observances, that somehow they'll be more spiritual if they can celebrate a new moon festival or something like that, that they will somehow be more spiritual if they do these things. I've watched it for years, friends. The call we just got from Michael in Georgia, you could multiply by the thousands or tens of thousands these days. And many Jewish believers do the same thing. They weren't raised in a religious Jewish home. Maybe they ate whatever they wanted to eat. Now they think, you know, I better be more careful about the dietary. You know, I better, Seventh-day Sabbath, you know, it never changed. I better be more careful. You know, there are many other laws. Well, the fringes, what about, you know, the ritual fringe? You know, the Bible, it does say about the sacred times and days and the new moons. And next thing you know, their lives are confused. Next thing you know, the passion for prayer, the passion to share the gospel is all but waned. The passion for the fullness of the Spirit is all but waned. Friends, I have watched it in front of my eyes for decades. And I always tell my friends that argue with me about this, listen, we can differ on what the Word says, and we're certainly free to do anything. You are 100% free, 100% free to not eat pork. I may have tasted shrimp or lobster once or twice in my life, but I'm not a shrimp or lobster eater or a pepperoni pizza eater or a bacon cheeseburger eater. Imagine the only time that pork would come near my lips is if it's in wonton soup at a Chinese restaurant. So this has never been part of my diet. I was a picky eater, and My mom was a picky eater. That's where I learned it. My father and sister ate everything. So it wasn't that I had a particular conviction or lifestyle issue with it either way. But when people think it will somehow make them more spiritual, it will somehow add to their walk with God if they don't eat shellfish or if they keep a certain holy day that's found in the Torah, I'm telling you, it is almost always the path to adding something to their walk with Yeshua. It is almost always the path to diluting their walk with him. I would say that Jewish believers who are convicted out of solidarity with their people to keep certain commandments, laws, customs as they do it, knowing that in and of itself it is not binding, but this is a call they have in the spirit, great. They can thrive in God at the same time, although I would still be cautious because it often goes down a path, and next thing they're trying to find out, what do the rabbis say? What do the rabbis have to say about this? And maybe I need to study more of the traditional rabbinic literature. Hey, I study it, I read it, but not to find out how God wants me to live. So let's just think of a few passages. Matthew 7, verses 17 to 20, is where Jesus says, "Don't think I came to abolish the Torah or prophets, but to fulfill." I take this up at great length in volume 4 of my series of books on answering Jewish objections to Jesus. There's a link to that, AskDrBrown.org, if you click on the line of fire. And you, of course, can also get in your comments on the show as well at that location. Clearly, Jesus does not do away with Torah or prophets. Clearly, he brings to fulfillment that which is spoken of, and there are still things in the process of fulfillment. So that means we have to examine everything and see how it works its way out in light of the finished work of the Messiah. Matthew 15 and Mark 7, there's a controversy with Jewish leaders about why his disciples eat with unwashed hands. And he explains that what goes in the mouth doesn't defile you, it's what comes out of the mouth. Matthew ends by saying, so it doesn't matter if you eat with unwashed hands or not. Mark 7:19, though, famously says that in saying this, that what you eat, doesn't matter what goes in your mouth, what comes out, that in saying this, he declared all foods clean. That's how it reads in the NIV, but it's very expansive. That's way beyond what the Greek says. The Greek is much more concise, and some have argued that the rendering of the King James, thus purging all meats, is closer to what it's saying. In other words, that the food goes in the stomach, it goes out your body, thus purging all meats. It just evacuates from your system, so therefore it doesn't defile you either way. So it had nothing to do with the actual dietary laws. It was a principle that he was given. When you get into Acts 10, Peter has this famous vision about Cornelius and the Gentiles, God showing him not to call unclean what God has made clean, using dietary laws as an example. But you could argue there that it's not about the dietary laws, it's about Jew and Gentile. And interestingly, in Mark 7 and Matthew 15, immediately after the teaching about food entering the body, etc., and the cleanness laws, immediately after that, Jesus goes and then ministers at a great distance, goes to location to get some rest, ends up driving a demon out of a Syrophoenician woman, Canaanite woman, so a Gentile woman, and then goes back. So there's a Jew-Gentile lesson there as well. Romans 14, Paul makes plain that nothing in and of itself is unclean. Some would say he means no food. No food in and of itself is unclean. But say dog is not a food, or donkey is not a food. So those things wouldn't be considered foods. What about when Paul tells Timothy that nothing should be refused that's set before you because it's sanctified by the word of God and prayer? Does that mean when you pray over the food, it instantly becomes blessed and therefore not unclean? Or does he mean it's sanctified by the word, meaning the foods that God has sanctified by the word, calling them clean in Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14? Maybe that's what it means. So there's a lot of give and take back and forth in these arguments. It's not as clear-cut as some would think unless we dig a little deeper. But I want to repeat what I said at the outset of the show. It does not matter to God spiritually in terms of your relationship with him, in terms of the cleanliness of your spirit. It does not matter one iota if you eat clean or unclean foods according to the Torah. God of light, welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Boy, I'm getting more comments on our Facebook page on this little question so far, even before the show started, than I can remember just about anything else I posted. Heated, passionate discussion. And what's it about? Dietary laws. I mean, some people are really passionately saying, you better believe we're commanded to keep these. If you love God, you keep his commandments, plain and simple. Every word that God spoke is true. Don't you be an anti-Torah person. You better believe we're commanded to keep the dietary laws, and it matters to God. And others saying, you kidding me? What about all the other laws that were clearly given to Israel for a time and for a season that we can't possibly keep today even if we wanted to? And plenty of laws we could keep we don't even think twice about. Why make a big deal out of the dietary laws, especially if you're not Jewish? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. If keeping the dietary laws, and perhaps other Torah commandments as well, has really brought you closer to Jesus, to Yeshua, and your prayer life is deeper, your outreach to Jewish people and others is deeper, there's more powerful witness, and I'd love to hear it. I'd love to hear it. I almost never hear that, except in the early stages. Give it a few months, give it a few years, and almost invariably, it becomes much more ingrown and ultimately complicating and suffocating and not Yeshua-centered, especially for my Gentile friends that feel these things are important. Hey, feel free to say, you know, if God said it, there must be a good reason for it. I just don't want to eat these things. No argument. I have no argument. The last thing I'm telling you is, go ahead and eat a ham sandwich, buddy. No, that's the last thing that'd be on my mind. You're absolutely free to eat or not eat whatever you want in that context. It's the idea that it somehow matters to God. 866-34-TRUTH. EJ in Sassoon City, California, thanks for calling.
Hey, Michael Brown. How you today, sir?
Hey, good, man. How about you, buddy?
Doing good. I know this is my third time calling in. It seems like every time I listen to you, I keep getting better and better and better. So,
well, good.
But me and my dad, you know, we listen to your, you know, listen to your thing, and we begin to talk, and we realize that it's actually a deeper issue, because your question doesn't matter that we, you know, keep dietary laws. It's actually, the real question is that, do you know who you are in Christ? Because, you know, up here in California, we see a lot of people, you know, who end up going towards Judaism, but they do so because they never stop to say, Lord, who am I in you? Because the Old Testament talks about how the Gentiles, we are grafted to the tree. So if we're grafted to the tree, that means that the fruit that we bear is going to be totally different. You know, so it's going to be a hybrid, of course, of the original, but we are a whole new breed. And it's not right for us to say, you know what, I want to be like them. And God's like, no, I want you to be like this. And this is where, by actually holding on to dietary laws, we then become more religious, that become passionately in love with Christ and those around us. Now, like you said, health reasons-wise, you know, like, I do agree. Sometimes, like, eating pork is actually good for your health, not eating certain things. You know, of course, they're going to make you live a long and fruitful life. But to make that now your food, your God, you now walked away from what God said, wait, hold on, I wanted you to be like this before me. I want you to live a certain lifestyle the way that I want you to live. Not to be Jewish, but I want you to sit down and talk with me. And most Christians, if you even ask them, do you guys even, like, you know, do you pray or do you even talk to God? Most of them actually follow instead of become leaders in their own faith.
They rather got it. So the bottom line then is, in your view, if you have a solid understanding of who you are in Jesus, then what would just be externals or perhaps commands that were given to one subset of the body, it doesn't matter to you because you have your place of security in the Lord. Hey, EJ, and
yeah.
what's your dad's name?
My dad's name is Elwin.
Elwin. All right. Hey, I appreciate you guys listening and discussing things, and maybe one day you'll have a disagreement between you, and you'll both call in and argue.
I like
bless
that.
Bless you, man. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
I take care.
All bye. Right. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Greg in Charlotte. Hang on, there we go. Hey, Greg, I see a note here that you're a Tar Heel fan.
Yeah, bro. I was just making a joke.
All right, you know what's funny though.
Yep.
I'm not an expert on college basketball, but somehow, and this may not make your day, buddy, but somehow years ago I was watching a game and Duke was playing,
right.
And I decided to root for Duke, and then somehow I was rooting against North Carolina, and that's kind of stuck with me. I mean, it's not a deep thing. I'm not a heavy-duty sports fan, number one, and I'm a transplant here to Charlotte. But actually, I was rooting against North Carolina and for Duke. But I don't talk about that much here in Charlotte because I want to survive another day, you know?
That's what I was saying. I was getting ready to say, you know, it's the first time I talked to you, and we was getting along so well there for a minute.
Yeah, we tried, man. I'm sorry. I blew it already. All right, what's on your mind, Greg?
You know, when I read the Word, I honestly, and I'm not perfect by no means, but I try to ask the Lord for wisdom, guidance, and understanding of it. And the way I understand it is God is saying that I agree with you. Spiritually, I don't think it helps you at all. I think he's just telling you how to take care of these flesh bodies, that if you eat pork, if you eat that, it's not going to help you, your flesh body. You know what I'm getting at with there?
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, heart disease and everything else.
So it'd be in the same category. You know, I like eating chocolate, so obviously I have to try to eat less, eat it in moderation. It doesn't touch my spirit. God never addresses chocolate in the Bible, but
exactly.
You got to be disciplined, and it's not healthy to eat too much of it.
Right, right. And that's my whole point is you know, I just think the Lord means it as, you know, he said that everything he made, it was good, but it serves a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, and the way I take it is I've tried to watch my diet because, you know, you was mentioning the bacon double cheeseburgers. Well, my favorite is the turkey sandwich with the bacon on it. But, again, I try to keep it in moderation, but I think the Lord is just letting us know how to take care of these flesh bodies. And I mean, they're, you know, it's just these flesh bodies is just a clay pot just
Got
to
it.
Get us through to where our ultimate goal is, which is spiritually with him. And like you said, I think what you're saying, that originally people start out that they do feel spiritually enlightened, but as time goes on, it almost feels like a burden to keep
up. Yeah, it becomes each thing leads to another. And what
right.
about this? What about that? And so, just to be clear then, so if a believer watches pornography, that defiles them. If a believer hears gossip, that defiles
right.
them. If a believer lets unclean words and angry words come out of their lips and fester in their minds, that defiles them. But if they had shrimp for dinner, that doesn't defile them.
Right, exactly.
Got it.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. And I really think, personally, and this is my personal opinion on it, and my understanding of reading the Word, and when it comes to understanding the Word, I'm scratching the surface. As far as I've just in the past year went and got, you know, I grew up in the King James Version. I just went back and got
Hey, Greg, tell you what. Hey, listen, we're out of time. We got a break
okay.
here. But one,
no
thanks
problem.
For calling in. And keep listening, and we'll keep teaching the Word and helping supplement what you're getting in the church and among your friends. All right. I'm going to read some verses. Oh, I got a really interesting community alert that was sent out in Florida by a counter-missionary organization. It's hard to read this one without laughing. And we pray for our friends that sent it out. So I'm going to share that with you when we come back. Stay with us.
Send the fire today.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us. Talking about believers and dietary laws. And this is really not an abstract discussion. This is a very hot topic and increasing numbers in the body. And what I've seen in my 38 years in the Lord is a swing from Christians thinking that it was never right for Jewish believers to live as Jews, to observe Seventh-day Sabbath, to celebrate the feasts, keep the dietary laws. It's absolutely wrong. You're going back to Judaism, to an acceptance of this may be something God calls Jewish believers to do for covenantal solidarity with their people or for the purpose of witness, swung from that, which I believe is a very healthy understanding, then swung to it's mandatory for Jewish believers to do this, then swung to it's mandatory for all believers to do this. And I've watched the swing, and while I appreciate the church on a certain level reconnecting to its Jewish roots. And I believe there's much important to gain from that. And I believe that God has raised up the Messianic Jewish movement, both as a restoration movement for the body and as a place of witness for the Jewish people. As long as I've been part of the movement and involved, I've also sounded many warnings because of these tendencies. We just posted on our website an article that I wrote, part of a public dialogue I had, going back to the late 80s, on the place of rabbinic tradition in Messianic Judaism. And we're not talking about the tradition of the rabbis right here, but I want to tie in something I believe the Lord showed me, back in 1984, and many leaders in the Messianic movement affirm this as well. This is an insight I believe the Lord gave me years ago, that the whole Jewish temptation, meaning the temptation for Gentiles to somehow put on Jewish things or act like Jews or be like Jews or search for Jewish blood somewhere in the family, or for Jews to think, man, I've got to be more Jewish. I'm talking about Jewish believers in Jesus. The whole, quote, Jewish temptation is in the soul realm, in the emotional, mental realm. The whole Jewish temptation is in the soul realm. It will fascinate, stimulate, complicate, suffocate. So be on your guard. Something that God spoke to me many years ago before I was actively involved in the Messianic movement. And one of the key Messianic leaders and theologians has repeated it through the years as a true word. It will fascinate, stimulate, complicate, suffocate. What does it mean? First, oh boy, I've just learned this. It's amazing. I am so excited. Did you know this? Did you know the Hebrew word for that? Wow, this is so exciting. It will fascinate, stimulate. Man, I'm so interested in studying the scriptures now. Boy, when we just do the Sabbath and light the Sabbath candles, by the way, lighting the Sabbath candles, not that it's a wrong thing to do, but that's totally rabbinic tradition only. And in fact, the prayer that's prayed says, you have commanded us to light the Sabbath candles, which God never commanded. That's rabbinic tradition. So you're praying a prayer that's not even a true prayer. But anyway, put aside the lighting of the candles is a separate issue. It's stimulating and, wow, fascinating, stimulating, then complicate. You know, I'm not sure, but I thought, my family, like Christmas, they like to do these things, but I don't think, because they serve pork, I just don't think I should be part. You know, I used to travel on this day, but it's Sabbath, and the rabbis say, and well, you know, if I do this, and it gets more and more complicated. But what about the laws about slavery? How does that apply to today? What about the laws about building a parapet in the roof of my house? Okay, I got a different kind of roof, but fascinate, stimulate, complicate, suffocate. Next thing you look, and the person's spiritual life is snuffed out. They're not vibrant witnesses anymore. Their prayer lives are not what they used to be. The power of faith in their lives is not operating anymore. Careful, friends. I fully believe in restoring Jewish roots of our faith. I fully believe that God does speak to many Messianic Jews out of covenantal solidarity with their people to live lives in harmony with many of the Torah commandments, especially those that pertain to life cycle. But the moment you think that if I do this, it somehow adds to my spirituality, or that as a Gentile, I somehow need to do this, it's a mistake. I'll read from the Jewish New Testament. It's speaking about these issues and others. Colossians 2, if along with the Messiah you died to the elemental spirits of the world, then why, as if you still belong to the world, are you letting yourselves be bothered by its rules? Earlier, this verse 16, so don't let anyone pass judgment on you in connection with eating and drinking or in regard to a Jewish festival or Rosh Chodesh, New Moon, or Shabbat, Sabbath. Meaning, the fact that you Colossians don't live by these things, don't let anybody pass judgment on you because you don't keep this Jewish festival. Oh, you eat these foods. Oh, you don't keep the New Moon. Oh, you don't keep 7-day Sabbath. These are a shadow of things that are coming. But the body, the reality, is of the Messiah. The substance is of Him. That's where our focus may be. Okay. I didn't get to that community alert that I wanted to read to you from a counter-missionary organization. We'll do that when we come back on the other side of the break. Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Thanks for joining us. Okay, I'm not going to have time to take any more calls, so just sit back and enjoy this last segment. We've been talking about the the dietary law, the whole question of the law and the Christian, the Torah and the believer. The Torah and the Jewish believer, the Gentile believer, is very complex, very massive, and in a very simplified way, we've addressed a couple of issues having to do with dietary laws. I've written on it more in my book, Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus, Volume 4. I have a couple of extensive answers that deal specifically with this. Then more concise form, my book, What Do Jewish People Think About Jesus? So we've linked that along with an important article on the website, AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. Tomorrow, I think I'm going to weigh in on what happened with the lightning strike that burned down the six-foot story statue of Jesus outside of an evangelical church in Ohio. I've been mulling it over, and I got a list of possibilities. We'll talk about that. And for our friends in Florida, especially the Fort Lauderdale area, we've got a debate scheduled with a conservative Jewish rabbi next month and a Jewish outreach for our friends in the New York area the middle of July. So we'll share more about that. But we did a debate last September. You can get the DVD. It's a debate between myself and Rabbi Barry Silver. He's a civil rights attorney, very passionate reform rabbi, almost atheistic in some of his beliefs or non-beliefs. And there was a community alert to the folks in that area in Florida sent out by a counter-missionary organization. And it said that they sent a small delegation to observe a debate firsthand. This is my debate with Rabbi Silver last September. Quote, though our presence was unobtrusive, we were still made to feel very unwelcome and at times even threatened. Threatened. Sitting there with a crowd of 500 people, the great majority, actually older Jewish people who weren't believers in Jesus, threatened. To the gentleman who wrote this, sir, if you felt threatened, it was a figment of your own imagination. The large majority of people in attendance were of Mr. Fine Silver's church, he was the organizer, and fellow Christian Messianic congregations, giving Dr. Brown a built-in home crowd, as it were. Actually, I don't know how many people came from Michael Fine Silver's congregation, but according to all reports, we had the great majority of the people there were non-believing Jews. Many times it's the opposite. It's mainly believers, but this particular debate, mainly non-believing Jews. As the debate progressed, the crowd showed itself to be increasingly hostile and disrespectful towards the Jewish speaker, Rabbi Barry Silver. Why? Because he was saying the Hebrew Scriptures are not the Word of God, because he was praising atheists, because he was saying he didn't even know if he believed the Passover happened and it didn't matter. Many of the people getting upset with him were non-believing Jews, Jews who don't believe in Jesus the Messiah. How do I know? Because some walked out. And some talked to me afterwards. They were furious. So the picture painted here. And by the way, don't take my word for it. Watch the debate. Watch the debate. You could. I was sent this the other day. I was almost laughing out loud reading it. So the Jewish representative at this event presented this case. Well, what we witnessed was more akin to a town hall meeting than a debate. Oh, he's certainly passionate. And I would gladly debate Rabbi Silver again on many issues. He's passionate. He's a clear-headed thinker. He's a civil rights attorney. But the fact is, he did not present a traditional Jewish position, which got many of the Jews very upset. And in fact, he called the God of the Old Testament a sadist and a murderer. So that is what actually got many of the people in the audience surprised and startled. Anyway, the community alert, warning people not to participate in debate. Hey, you know what I like to do? Let's put the issues on the table and talk about them. Let's put the issues on the table and think them through together. And let's dialogue, and let's pray, let's study, and let the truth triumph. Friends, you work out the issue of the dietary laws between you and God. Keep your eyes focused on Yeshua, Jesus, and bear much fruit.